Hi, and welcome to Watch Next, the podcast where we recommend what you should watch next. I'm Dr. Ruby Sánchez Lozoya. Each episode, join me in a conversation with fascinating scholars and thinkers to explore world cinema in a way that feels warm, inviting, and completely jargon-free. Today, we talk with David Salkowski about Battle of Algiers. David Salkowski is an assistant professor of musicology at the University of North Florida. His research focuses on musical entanglements with modernism and modernity in Russia and Southeastern Europe. His forthcoming book, Music for an Imagined Liturgy, explores the religious community and institutions of Russian Orthodoxy through its music on the eve of the revolution. Since we will be discussing the film in detail throughout the episode, consider this your spoiler reminder. And with that, let's begin. Welcome to the podcast, David.
Hi, Ruby. Thanks so much for having me.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. Yeah, I watched a pretty fascinating film yesterday, and I'm feeling ready to talk with you about it.
I'd like to introduce our guests, not only through their bio and their many accomplishments, but also thinking about the questionnaire they filled out for us to get their sense of the tastes. I've been wanting to tell you this for like weeks now when I saw your answers, and you tell me that you don't like musicals. You gave it a 3. And as a music person, what is your beef with musicals?
Oh, no. I have to account for my tastes here. Yeah, I like some musicals, I suppose. I think there's probably... I like operas, I have to say. Maybe I'm just really pretentious. That could be part of it. But I think there's something about an opera where you have the suspension of disbelief throughout, where there's like a totally different sound world. You know, there's music has created this entirely different world as opposed to a musical where it's, you know, regular acting and dialogue, and all of a sudden you break into song and the song has to be motivated by the plot in some sort of way. Of course, that's a generalization. But yeah, there's just something with that doesn't always work for me. Of course, I mean, I've seen lots of great musicals and I love many of them. You know, I love all the Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. But yeah, it's never something that I reach for. Maybe, yeah.
I was very surprised when I saw this. And I've been wanting to ask this for a long time, especially because when we were thinking of what film to recommend, like Bollywood came to mind, and then I had to like go back because this man doesn't like musicals. So what's up with that?
I do like the songs from musicals sometimes more than the musicals themselves. Yeah.
The other one was that really stood out for me was that you wanted a film that would make you cry. And when I read that, I was like, this is really where I was. It was like, I will make this person cry. And I have just a film for you. So we thought about a couple of films. And the first one that I knew would be devastating, because it's a devastating film. It's a film that after you watch it, you do not know how to feel about the world. You need like a time for yourself. And like, I just need like, nobody touch me. Leave me alone. I need to be with my feelings. And that is Sirat. The other one was In the Mood for Love, but you had already seen it. So we wanted to find something else that it would be also a new suggestion for you. And Gully Boy, which you very generously were able to accommodate us, because we're going to be talking about Gully Boy with another guest who are two poetry experts. So I appreciate the flexibility. So from those different suggestions, we ended up at Battle of Algiers. How did you like Battle of Algiers?
Well, if I could just say first, I'm really glad to have had the additional suggestions too, because I have these, you know, biases against musicals, I might not have found Gully Boy. And I, you know, just to, I guess we're plugging your future episode, but it was a really great watch. So I look forward to hearing what your experts will say on that. And Sirat also is now on my list as well. And so that was actually really lovely to have those recommendations. Battle of Algiers. I thought it was okay. No, I'm just kidding. It blew my mind. It's something I've known about, but was, despite, you know, having a thumbnail sketch of it in my mind and sort of knowing the premise and a little bit of the reception, I was more or less coming in cold and just knowing that it would be an intense experience and that it, you know, of course, it's a classic that, you know, I had never seen. But beyond that, I was coming in fairly cold. I mean, from the opening scenes, I was just totally gripped. And I know we will probably talk a little bit about music, but both the music and the sound, I just thought were so fascinating throughout. But yeah, I was grateful to have the opportunity to finally watch this movie that just totally floored me.
So it was a good match?
I think so. There were moments where I was on the verge of tears, but not in the same way of these, you know, other make me cry movies. I think right. I was, you know, after the film is when you can finally sort of exhale with mm-hmm. Battle of Algiers. And there were some really, just devastating scenes. And I guess one of the reasons why this film is one that we still talk about is so many scenes jumped out of the frame mm. and made me think about things, you know, much closer to home as well, or mm-hmm. much closer to the present moment. So it was very affecting, and it was a pretty intense experience of watching it.
And going back to what you said of like, it's a film that it's really after you've finished watching it, you can breathe. Yeah, I think Battle of Algiers is a film that, yeah, while you're watching it, you feel the intensity of the movie. But to me, the power of the film also comes from that it stays with you. Like, you cannot stop thinking about it. Like, once mm-hmm. it's over, it's still in your mind. I think the ending is quite powerful by design. So is that even after it ends, it stays with you. And we will mm-hmm. definitely talk more about it. Just to give a quick plot summary, Battle of Algiers is a 1966 film directed by Italian filmmaker Gillo Pontecorvo, which is an Italian-Algerian co-production. And the film itself is in French and Arabic. It's super interesting. Battle of Algiers is a semi-documentary style film that depicts the Algerian fight for independence from French colonial rule between 1954 and 1962. And the film chronicles the organized guerrilla campaign in the Kasbah by the Front de Libération Nationale, or FLN, and the counterinsurgency tactics used by the French military. And it loosely follows the rise and eventual fall of insurgent leader Ali Lapointe. But as the film develops, it's clear that the film is interested in showing that this is beyond one individual, and it is truly about the movement. For our musicology expert here, we also are going to definitely talk about the sound and the music. And behind the score is Ennio Morricone, who with Pontecorvo created the score from the film. Can you tell us a little bit more about Morricone? Because I'm sure you know about him.
Sure. I mean, I'm not a Morricone expert, but I would say my first exposure was when I was an intern at a classical radio station. We had a syndicated program about film music. And one of my jobs was to do something that I'm sure AI is doing now of copying and pasting things from an Excel spreadsheet onto this sort of public radio exchange website. And I just kept seeing Morricone's name over and over again because he's such a prolific and influential composer, both in Italian cinema, but also Hollywood and world cinema. You know, part of his career is in the spaghetti westerns, but also so many major Hollywood films. Yeah, and he's got quite an interesting compositional career. He was part of sort of experimental group. He was active for quite a while. One thing with this film is the way he's able to sort of weave together various different sort of stylistic points, different sounds that might be diegetic, that might be from the world of the movie, but might not be also. There's certain scenes that were really powerful with use of drums. Mm-hmm. There's the scene where the women are cutting their hair off and dyeing their hair. And at first I'm watching, I'm not sure what's going on, but the drums have me so gripped. And it feels like it's in the room in a certain sense, in the room that they're in, which feels quite tense and like the outside is pressing in as they're about to go back out into the world. And then, of course, you know, there's these very romantic, sort of elegiac, stirring excerpts as well from the score. And and then there's some bits of sort of high modernist composition too that weaves its way in a way that I think is really serves the film well as well. Mm.
So can you tell us a couple of the movies, if you know, that Morricone is behind? So for our listeners, even if they have not heard the name, they might be familiar with the titles.
I would have to take another look at the disc at the filmography, to be honest. But you could pull up almost any
Yeah.
Western from
No,
a certain day.
that's on
Fistful of
me.
Dollars, I want to say, is one of
The
them.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
The good, okay.
It's my bad. That's on me. And it's also you very nicely told me, well, you can Google it, you know, which is fine. But the other question I actually did have for you, and you already kind of hinted at it, but so as a musicologist or as a music person, do you feel like you do pay more attention to the score when you're watching a film? I mean, when we have talked about this before, like you ask me if, oh, now that you're a film scholar, do you find that you, when you're watching a movie, you're actively thinking about the making of or like the elements of it? Do you feel like when you're watching a movie, are you naturally more inclined to pay attention to the music, or are things that stand out more for you? Or do you feel like you are able to recognize a piece of music and that kind of changes your appreciation of the film?
Yeah. No, I definitely pay a lot of attention to music as I'm watching a film. And, sometimes it sort of fades in and out of the background, even if you are sort of alive to the music. Sometimes it's supposed to blend in, I suppose. But I guess I think there's the moments that really stand out to me are the moments where you're not quite sure if the music is inside the film or outside of it, if there's some sort of disruption or disjuncture between what you're watching and what you're hearing, whether or not that's intentional on the part of the director and the composer or musicians, the points of sort of tension or dissonance between the film and the sound. Like, for example, in this film, the scenes where you have these terrorist bombings that the FLN does, they're happening in these sort of bourgeois French spaces, colonial spaces, and they're listening to music. It's like kids dancing and stuff. And those moments, and it's coming right after the moment I was just talking about a minute ago with the woman cutting their hair off and getting ready to go into these spaces where you have this very intense underscore to the film that's maybe telling us something about the character's psychology or cueing how we're supposed to feel. It's not just a regular hair trimming salon, right? It's
Yes.
they're preparing to go place these bombs. And then you're in these spaces and you hear kids listening to various different types of popular music and just enjoying themselves. And so I think most people as they're watching the film are having that experience that's cued by the music, of that sort of disjuncture between these two different worlds. But I guess, my vocational hazard is that I see that and I just start thinking about it and really appreciate those moments. And then there's, I suppose also accidental moments where there's, music is so multiply determined that, maybe it latches on to an emotion or an event that's happening in the screen, but then sort of makes you think about something completely unrelated as well that can either distract or enhance the experience. But yeah, I'm certainly listening a lot and to a certain extent pondering those things as I'm watching the film.
And this is why I'm happy to have these kind of conversations, because I think as someone who is not very akin to music, definitely as a viewer, I notice things, but I've always been very envious and curious of people that can actually articulate what is it that they're hearing and or remember it after the fact. So I do want to hear your thoughts on that particular sequence that you're talking about. So this is around minute 38 in the film when the bombing sequence happens. So this is the time that after people from the FLN have been killing policemen, now the French military goes to the Casbah and plants a bomb in a residential area in the Casbah, resulting in the death of multiple people, also innocent people. And then it immediately is followed by a sequence in which, like you were mentioning, the women are cutting their hair and they're preparing themselves to go and plant their own bombs in the French quarters. And then we see also the consequence of those bombings. And you mentioned two things that are very particular of, or very important in that sequence, and that really stood out. One is the drumming, the contrast with the song, the very popular Spanish song that is playing, and then the repetition of a song called Street of Thieves. So let's talk about it. Do you want to talk about the drumming first, or you want to talk about the Street of Thieves song first?
Let's go straight into the Street of Thieves.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it. Yeah, this is the part of the questionnaire of Make Me Cry. Because it's a moving piece, more so after having seen the film, you know, than if I was just listening to it on its own.
So for me, what is striking of the use of music here is that it repeats itself in the film during the moment of when victims are being pulled out in the Casbah, and then when the victims of the bombing in the French quarters are happening. So it's a way of making this, or of connecting these moments. They are interrupted in a sense by the drumming and the actual planting of the bomb, but it is nonetheless uniting them sonically, musically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one thing, since you asked me if I listen to things differently as a musicologist, that sort of is in the back of my head is this kind of just sounds kind of like a Bach chorale. It's
what is that?
Yeah, so just the tradition of mostly Protestant hymn singing. That is there's so many that J.S. Bach left us of just harmonizations of hymn texts that has a sort of lends a sort of sacred or spiritual affect to it, which is interesting that this is, of course, like a cultural referent from Central Europe that is attached with Protestantism, has all these sort of cultural specificities. It's supposed to cue this response in the listeners, whether or not you're personally attached to that, rather than, say, an autochthonous Algerian lament or something like that, which may very well draw on the Bach chorale as well if we're thinking about the 1950s. But anyways, that's kind of something I'm thinking about in the background. But where I'm experiencing is, yeah, this very emotional moment that, and it struck me when I first heard the first scene. Well, it's a gruesome scene. It's one that I can't watch without thinking of some of the news we've been sort of watching over the past 2 or 3 years of young children being pulled out of the rubble. And so it's quite powerful, and it also makes me think about what it means to consume these images as entertainment, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm very glad you brought this up, because I think it's fascinating and actually very quite important. But you also described this music as almost like an elegy. And I think, yeah, there is something, perhaps not, as you're mentioning, I don't think this is particularly tied to a particular religion or religious tradition. It is, as in, like, exclusively. But I do think it has a sense of something that can be associated with a moment of mourning and of grief. Because even in the images, that when the victims are being pulled out of the rubble, they're completely like spread out, a little bit like the images of the body of Christ when it's being pulled out,
wow,
either with like the Mother Mary, etc. Right, this lifeless bodies, and what I find very interesting, and when people think why Battle of Algiers is very quote unquote balanced, is because it's the same music used for both victims, right? It is used for the Algerians and it is used for the French. So it's a moment in which you remember that these are people, these are both victims. And it, I think that is one of the things that makes the film, for lack of a better word, balanced. But what is important also to remember is that it's actually not completely balanced, right? I think it has a very particular voice in talking against colonialism, and it's very clear about those ambitions, right? It's not saying like the French did bad things, the Algerians did bad things. It's really not playing this middle of the road message. It's actually quite interested in talking against the invasion of and the occupation of France in Algeria. But what it's also doing is reminding us that the people that pay the price are innocent people. And as much as we want to make these distinctions, when you look at the human cost of this revolutions, it is gigantic, and it doesn't want us to forget that people are people and people are suffering, which is a little bit what one of the characters says, right? When Jafar is speaking to Ali Lapointe, he says, it's hard to start a revolution, it's hard to keep it, it's hard to end it, and it's even harder to grow from it. So there is a price throughout to pay, and this is why he's saying that violence cannot be the only solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really... that scene in particular, I thought was really smart. And I mean, it put a lot of wisdom into the mouths of the revolutionaries as well. I guess it's no surprise when then you look at the casting decisions. Jafar was one of the revolutionaries, yes, and pretty extraordinary to be such an effective actor who was also in the midst of the political struggle. But yeah, and he says something about, you know, I mean, he acknowledges the sort of tactical reason why they're doing these bombings and stuff, while also, as you said, framing it in terms of, you know, this can't be it. The music in that, those two scenes, I really love the way you've tied it together with that visual imagery of this image of Christ carried by either on Mary's lap and these children reflecting that image. Yeah, the music absolutely sets up a parallel. But as you said, I think it's a parallel without any equivocation, you know, and like you said, there is a point of view here. It seems very clear as a film that there is moral ambiguity around the actions of the revolutionaries, the insurrectionists. You even, I think, see it mixed with just nervousness on the face of mm-hmm. these women as they're about to do it. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely are doing horrific acts of violence. And I think you're never wondering whether you can both be on the side of the freedom fighters, but also doubt their tactics, you know, and it's very humanizing while also just sort of, it's acknowledging this dialectic of violence between the two sides and humanizing victims without equivocating between colonialism and anti-colonialism, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. And it reminds me of another dialogue that happens later in the film. And after I mention this, we'll go back to that moment because, yeah, there is a total hesitation from part of the women freedom fighters. And we see it also in the cinematography of when we look at the close-ups of the people who are in the cafe in the French quarters. So let's talk about that in a second. what I wanted to mention very quickly is that there is something about the fact that we do see those close-ups in contrast to we do not get to see a close-up before the bombing in the Kasbah. And I think I related to the line of one of the... It wasn't Jafar. It was somebody else who gets arrested, and he's the one that gets a press conference. And he's asked by one of the reporters of, like, do you, basically exactly this question is like, do you feel like it's correct to bomb children? And he says, do you feel it's correct to use napalm in villagers? And they're referring to in Indochina, basically Vietnam. And he says, we will give you our baskets if you give us your planes. And I thought it was also a brilliant dialogue that he uses, right? Of like, why are you asking me these questions, but you're not asking yourself these questions, right? And there is something about, oh, because when we do it in close quarters, it's bad, but you can do it from far away. And that seems just like the cost of war, which makes me then to think of like, it is an interesting, the faces of the victims that we do see ahead of time are the French victims, right? We are in the cafe. The woman is hesitating because there are children in this cafe. There are innocent people in this cafe. Is the guy who's behind, in the cafe, in the bar, the dance bar, and the airline, is the bartender is there. There's the young people that are dancing. There's a child eating ice cream. Mm-hmm. And you see them in close-up. Like, they are identified individually. And we do not get that with the Algerians. But it is an interesting moment of contrast of how that is picturized, but it's also how we hear it, right? We hear the song of Elegy, of Thieves, after the bombing. But when all of this is happening, we have this very intense drumming happening before the drums, before the explosions.
Yeah. You know, one thing that this makes me also wonder about, I'd have to listen to it again, but right before... I guess he's the police chief or something like this. The French colonial police chief goes and places the bomb. Mm-hmm. He's at a party. They're drinking and having fun. And they're in their little, dare I say, zone of interest.
Yeah.
Where they're having a great time and they say, oh, it's getting late, we better go. So I'd be curious if there's music and sound in that scene, what that actually sounds like and how that might, you know, also frame the way that we're listening to it.
And I'm glad you brought something of interest. Let's talk about the sequence of the bombings. It is a very interesting thing that happens, that the bombing in the Kasbah had just happened in the sequence before. So in the level of plot, it has just happened, say, maybe perhaps at the night before or days earlier. And then immediately after, you say people as if nothing has happened. Like, they are right there. Something humongous has just happened right there, and yet there's people that are very happily just dancing. So you can kind of, like, and this is why the film has a very clear point of view. It's like, yeah, they are bombing us, they're bombing the Kasbah, and people get to ignore it.
And I thought the whole film was just so clear-eyed in its depiction of, borders and police barriers and segregation. And there's the scene with the older man. Maybe he's I don't know, merchant or vagrant. I'm not really sure how he's depicted as sort of an older man on the street, and he's in the European quarter, and all these people come out and shout at him from the balcony, and he's just for being there in public, and these sort of different sort of conceptions of space also that it sets up. And yeah, and these faces have their own sounds to them as well. Like the yeah that these drums are one of them, but also one thing I wanted to mention as well that I found so maybe the most powerful memory from the film is that I guess you would call it a ululation, this sort of cry of the women. This has just been sticking with me so much.
I want to talk more about the drums, but let's talk about this, because that was also one of my, that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you and discuss, because it is so powerful. What were your thoughts about it?
I mean, there's the scene where there's, I mean, this is really just like a really interesting use of sound all around, because you've got the strikers. There's a general strike. Again, another topical thing from this film, now that talk of general strike is in the air again. There's the general strike happening, and the workers are being, herded on and off of these trucks, and there's so we've got a confined physical space, and then it's, sort of there's this oppression from above of the loudspeaker of the French propagandist saying, like the FLN is, making you stay home from work, and they're against you, like get back to work so you can eat. And then young Omar, I think, the kid sort of somehow steals the microphone and says this, revolutionary slogan. And then there's these calls. And then I believe this is one of the scenes where the women sort of let out this cry, and it's, I mean, it was just so electrifying. And then in the end sequence of all the recurring revolts and uprisings, this sound comes back again and again, and it turns, I mean, eventually it becomes the sound of victory, I suppose, because that is like, it's like the wave that overtakes the structure in the long run is that sound itself almost.
I mean, it's interesting that you call it the sound of victory. I hadn't thought about it that way, and I think that's actually very fascinating. But it is a sound that can only occur in chorus, in with a bunch of people, right? Not one person can, I mean, one person can do it, but it has the effect when it's multiple people. And since you brought up opera, granted, I don't think these texts are necessarily in conversation with each other, but I remember you and I talked a little bit about Madame Bovary, and there's a haunting chorus that happens, right? And I think it's haunting because it's happening. It's when multiple voices come together, and it is ululating. It's quite powerful that way. But also when Ali LaPointe is in prison and one of the people's about to get executed, he starts shouting, right? When you have nothing else, then you use your voice, right? It's a very strong way of saying that, like, in the absence of anything else, we still have our voices and we must speak up. And when we'll speak up together, then there's this push happening. And I think this is why the film is really not about Ali LaPointe at all, but it's about the movement in Algeria for independence. It's not about one individual at all.
Wow, that's a beautiful connection there. And I mean, one thing that also, as you're talking about it, it makes me think of is sound and voice versus language in a sense. Because of course the film's both in French and Arabic, and there's these moments I believe when he's in prison, he shouts in Arabic, right? And there's moments where the Algerians can always understand the French, but it's not a two-way street because the colonizers haven't bothered to learn Arabic. And there's all these technical intrusions of sound. Yes. There's the microphone. There's even, I don't know, this was something that I haven't really been able to make sense of the meaning of it yet, but there's the narrator who at a certain point towards the end, we see the like radio announcer, a documentary news announcer who's actually speaking into the microphone, framing it all. And then you've got these cries that are not only illegible linguistically, they're non-linguistic. They're just cries. And so this sort of group and like the humming chorus you're mentioning from the Puccini opera, it's humming. It's not singing. There's a sort of way in which illegible voice carries, you know, this sort of collective meaning that, you know, sort of, I guess, subverts the sort of technically mediated linguistic voice that the colonizers have.
I think that's beautiful. And I'm very thankful for this conversation because it has made me think about the film in different ways, notice things that I haven't noticed before, and also be able to articulate things in this way, right? I think it's quite lovely to see, really, like you said, the interruptions of sound and how that potentially has for subversion. But David, it was very fun talking to you about this, and we could keep talking about it. And I hope our listeners will then rewatch Battle of Algiers and be looking out for this sonic elements and even find more. But David, are you ready for your quick fire quiz?
Oh, I was born ready, Ruby.
Favorite movie snack?
Mixture, Kerala mixture.
Okay. movie theater or streaming?
Theater.
Trailers or no spoilers?
Oh, trailers.
A movie you would like to see again for the first time?
Oh, that's so difficult. I would like to see Totoro for the first time again.
Oh, nice. A movie you watch way too young?
I think it was called Bataan. Bataan. Really intense war movie that my mom showed me when I was a young child. Too intense.
Sounds. I haven't heard of it. One of your favorite movies. Doesn't have to be the favorite, just one that you really like.
Andrei Rublev.
Okay. And one film that is required watching, as in like one film that you think everybody should watch.
Well, maybe because of what I just watched, that what comes to mind is this new-ish documentary, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat.
Yes, it's a brilliant film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, David, thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Ruby, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Watch Next. A huge thanks to our guests for joining us today, and to everyone at Lates and at UT Austin's College of Liberal Arts and the Department of Asian Studies for making this show possible. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a conversation. Leave us a rating or a review to help other listeners discover the filmmakers and scholars we feature. New episodes drop every 2 weeks. Listen to Watch Next wherever you get your podcasts.